Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's Friday already. How about that? Kelly Kirsch and Riley Pollock. Busy show today. We've got, Eric Francis Friday's coming up. Elliot Freeman about 12:45, but we'll kick off the show like we do all the time. Let's find out what's up with the Flames and talk to Lou.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style, your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
I don't expect anything differently from him. He understands what it's all about. He knows how to handle the ups and downs of the playoff rigors. And, he's going to give our dressing room a real solid rudder here as we move forward into this coming up. So I just expect him to play his game, but he's always been a guy that's been able to elevate. He's always been a guy that's found opportunities to create key moments in playoff series. And I've got a funny feeling that he just may do it again.
What he's talking about is Milan Lucic. And there's a guy that's got a nice resume when it comes to the playoffs, obviously, Lou.
He does indeed. 114 games, 70 playoff points, a Stanley Cup. And when Brad Treleving made the James Neal trade, it wasn't about looking, in my opinion, for Milan Lucic of 2011 or maybe even up until 2014, 2015. Why he made the move is he was looking for somebody to add to his culture, to give a group that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience more experience and somebody to look to and somebody who has had a great passion for wanting to help. And Kelly, on this show, you know that I've talked numerous times about how I have seen him take young people under his wing, whether it's in hotel lobbies, whether it's on the bench, whether it is in practice. Milan Lucic, who has been through a lot in his life, is the definition to me of a hockey player. He loves it. He lives it. He breathes it. And unlike a lot of others, he has a lot of experience doing it. So he was interviewed yesterday by the media. And frankly, I could listen to him talk about hockey and his feelings on hockey all day long. And to be completely upfront and truthful, I can't say that about everyone because they don't necessarily have some of that capacity. But he's a hockey player. And from the first time I met him at 17 as a member of the Vancouver Giants, you could tell how passionate he was. And we'll get more into that. But, we're at a point now in this camp entering the final inter-squad game. The team's going to leave on Sunday to go into Edmonton, to go into the bubble. And in order to do different, you need to have people who have been there and done that, if people will actually take advantage of it, to lean on someone like him, to learn from him. And I'm going to play a couple of clips, but I'm going to start first and foremost with where his mindset is at and how he sees even the next week leading up to August the 1st and what might go hand in hand with being successful in the playoff series.
It's not going to be perfect either. There's going to be times where you're going to hit a rough patch, and whether it's 5 minutes in a game or a period or even a whole game, but it's how you respond and how you come back. And I think right now, and this is the way that I view it, heading into the first game against Winnipeg is in that series, it's all about winning one game. We can't look at winning the series and all that type of stuff. You got to start off by just winning one game and then going from there.
Yeah, I love hearing from him because he does not do cliches. It's in his DNA, and he'll give you, if you ask him a question, he'll give you a straight answer. So you better ask him something, relevant. I've noticed that with him too. Like he doesn't suffer fools very much. So you have to ask him something relevant and something, you better know what you're talking about, I guess is what I should say. And you've known him a long time. You knew him back in his junior days with the Giants, right?
I think it really is a testament, Kelly, to his passion and his awareness. He loves hockey. He loves to talk about hockey. That's been his life. And it's not just, you know, our good friend Rob Kerr and I were having a conversation recently, and he used this line. You know, for some people, you work as, and it's about a lifestyle. For other people, it's more of a profession. It's more than just a job. It's more than, you know, just doing what you kind of have to do to get it done. He loves the game. I know that I've heard Jeff Ward talk. Jeff and I have had conversations about it. This guy is what Jeff would call a hockey savant. Kelly, you can't get to be one of those if you're not aware of everything. If you're not watching other games and how people do things, if you're, you know, that's really in so many ways how I judge in terms of people as much as players. People will tell you in a conversation whether they're different. That's what you were just talking about. He isn't the same as others. He is thoughtful. He's a pro, and he's a hockey player. And here's just another clip to kind of, you know, lead down the road that you and I are addressing. So he was also asked yesterday about the role of secondary type scoring and depth.
You can go look at history and look at all the Stanley Cup winners, and you know, they get big goals from different guys at different times. And, you know, I look back at the year that we won, you know, Michael Ryder had 8 goals in that playoff run, you know, same thing, like, Rich Peverly had, 2 goals in game 4 against Vancouver, you know, when we won that game in the final. Chris Kelly stepped up and scored some, huge goals, too, in that series. And a lot of people forget, you know, Tyler Seguin was a young kid, and he didn't play in the first 2 series, and he came in and he had a big big game in game 2 against Tampa, and with 2 goals and an assist, I believe. And, you know, we couldn't – he kind of got us rolling in that series. So, like you talk about, you need guys to step up at different times. So it's going to be really important. I think depth is our strength. Especially up front. So we can't just, you know, rely on the big boys to get it all done offensively. We gotta do our part as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really interesting way to put it, and a lot more depth and some color to explain what happens, right? You need everyone to score. You're gonna need your third line, your fourth line, and he has seen 114 playoff games. 70 points, a plus 33, I mean, and 179 penalty minutes, too. Like, he's been through the wars. I always think about that game that Leaf fans just shudder. You know, they had the big lead, and then...
Mm-hmm. 4-1.
You get that goal, and just the look on his face is like, guys, we got this. We're going. We're rolling. And it was just, once that happened, you knew it was just a matter of time till the Leafs were going to blow that game, and Boston just grabbed it.
Jeff Ward pointed to that very moment, Kelly, yesterday, in talking about Milan and what he expects and what he's come to learn. And as Milan said, you know, he has done the majority of all that playoff work for and being surrounded by Jeff Ward. So they have an excellent relationship, and that was something that he pointed to. But in case people missed this side of it, in where I was going, yes, he talked about the importance of third and fourth line scoring in depth. But Kelly, did you hear how in-depth his answer was about remembering this guy
players
did this
and times and
right,
scores,
times
yeah.
And how many goals and what? You think it doesn't matter to you and you're not completely invested? When are people invested? I know when people are invested, when they care and when it really matters. That's who he is, and that's why I wanted to play that clip. Now, I'm not trying to be on this program today saying that, you know, he's going to lead the Calgary Flames on his own to the promised land. But what I'm telling, you know, at least trying to help our listeners think about is there's so much more to being a winning team than whether James Neal had 19 goals and he had 7 or 8 or 9. There's way more to building your culture and your team. And if winning is really important, I think your expectation and your standard and your culture, and that has to come by and large in every business on every team from people who have had reps, from people who have been there and done that, because they just know. Yeah. Now, then it becomes up to other people in the team to go, I see value. How can I add to the value? And the other, I just want to share these quickly because, like you pointed to, you know, I've had lots of experience with him. And, you know, watched him in 2 Memorial Cups, watched him win Memorial Cup. And in the 2007 Memorial Cup, I almost got Riley to find it today, but, we didn't necessarily need to. In the championship game against Medicine Hat, he had what has been nicknamed the shift. And it was a massive moment in the first period, Kelly, when he basically ran over 3 players to help set up a scoring chance, 2 of them, in fact, and then got into a fight with Medicine Hat's tough guy. Now, after the game was over, and that summer, people forget, but I was lucky enough to call the Canada-Russia Junior Super Series, where Canada went over to Russia for 4 games, played 2 in Ufa, 2 in Omsk, and then came back and played 4 in Canada, an 8-game series, which was kind of, you know, trying to replicate a little bit what happened in 1972. Well, I'm going to give you a few names on that team for people who may have forgotten that series. By the way, Brent Sutter was the coach. Jonathan Bernier, Steve Mason, Thomas Hickey, Drew Doughty, Carl Alsner, Sam Gagne, John Tavares, go on down, David Perron, go on down the list. Do you know who the captain of that team was?
I can guess.
Milan Lucic was the captain of that star-studded Kyle Turris group of guys. I don't think you, and the crazy thing is he made the NHL coming out of that event and never ended up getting to play for Canada at the World Junior because he made it to the NHL too quickly with the Boston Bruins. But that tournament in itself, that event series, was another springboard for him. But I don't think it was an accident that Brent Sutter amongst that type of a group made him the captain.
We're talking with Peter Labardius right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan as the Flames get ready to head to Edmonton and get into the bubble coming up on the weekend. And they will play the Edmonton Oilers in an exhibition game. That is on Tuesday. We'll have that one for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. So just to kind of close the book a little bit on Milan, he was obviously, we talked about his stats, his playoff prowess with the Bruins. But, you know, being, you know, maybe a half-empty guy, that was 6 years ago. What is a reasonable expectation for Flames fans for him at his age and at his skill level at this time?
To be a physical presence, to be really responsible, to be great on the net front in terms of the second power play unit, and to help guide and lead his teammates by being one of the people going into a very difficult situation to lead the way and help them understand that if you're going to win this kind of a hockey event, you need to be all in. He's going to be all in. I can't, Kelly, completely quantify it with goals and assists, but I know he's going to be all in. And he's going to be physical, and he's going to be prepared, and he can't wait to get going. And if a lot of his Calgary Flame teammates kind of feed off of that and go into it, including guys who have a chance to make, at least when it comes to numbers, a much bigger impact, this team's going to do well. And that's why right off the top, you heard Jeff Ward say, I know it's, you know, it's 2020 and years have gone by, but I have a sneaking suspicion this guy's going to chip in again.
Well, that's why they got him. So we'll find out beginning on, well, a week tomorrow, as it's starting to feel a lot more real as the teams get closer to getting to those bubbles. And maybe help us out a little bit, Lou, what today looks like. We've heard about the inter-squad game coming up later on this afternoon. But what are you looking for in kind of their final tune-up here in Calgary before they go up to Edmonton?
Well, I know you're going to be shocked, Kelly, because we barely got into it the other day. But, you know, probably be looking at the goalies again for
what?
Two periods. And for yep, stunner. I'm going to be watching the special teams work today, if indeed they follow that format where the third period is all special teams type work, to not only see how they do, but more importantly, their utilization. Yesterday, Derek Ryan was back with Lucic and Dubé, which left kind of a rotation with Jankowski and Reeder and Sam Bennett and Zach Rinaldo. So I'll be interested to see how they are employed. So another step, another important step after a couple of tweaks, which really was a big result of Derek Ryan, and we've talked about him a lot this week and how key I think he potentially figures to be as this whole story has another chapter and we get to unfold it every day. So that's what I'll be watching today starting at 4:30.
Wow, that's going to be neat. It's starting to feel really real.
It is.
And, yeah.
Is it ever?
I was thinking about you last night, flipped over and watched the Dodgers dismantle the San Francisco Giants. They got, you know, a couple of big bats in there and a couple of gloves, like two back-to-back MVPs, first time in a long time. So, I mean, I was just getting into the radio business in 1988 when the Dodgers won the World Series. It's been a while since then, Lou. Is it what's going to happen?
Yep. What's gonna happen with them?
Yeah.
Well, listen, their talent level is off the charts. Like, it's off the charts. But, Kelly, it's been that way for a number of years. The one thing I've not liked about the Los Angeles Dodgers is in the playoffs, they have not executed and done the little things right to win World Series. To me, they've become so analytical in their approach, their lineups, and it, again, baseball's an analytics sport. They just went out and spent, I don't know, three countries on Mookie Betts.
Yep.
You know, I think he can afford all our lunches today, tomorrow, and forever. So the Dodgers have never been shy on spending money, but yes, Kirk Gibson in 1988 and company, that's been a long, long time. And they've knocked on the door, frankly. If they don't at least knock it down, it's only on one group, them.
Yeah.
And we'll see if they can figure it out. And the last thing I'd say is, yes, I have to admit, I watched three or four innings last night, but I'm not very happy with Major League Baseball these days.
No?
No. Nope. Not a bit.
Why is that?
You have known me for what, 30 years?
Yeah.
You're quite well aware why I'm not their biggest fan these days.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, my, you couldn't get that settled, hey? Okay,
yeah.
Well, you know what? We'll let you go. I know you're going to be down at the Dome watching the inter-squad game, and then Monday brings a whole new week and going to be a busy week for us around here at Flames Radio. So we're excited.
Yeah, we're incredibly excited. I got to tell you, though, it's going to be so weird next week that the team is going to practice, and I'm not going to be able to see it. But welcome to COVID. That's what we have to do, and that's what we do. Safety first.
And Lou, just before the final thing before we go, you have to say congratulations, Kelly, because today, 13 years ago, I got married. It's my anniversary today.
Oh,
right?
Carla. Carla.
Yeah.
I mean, I could do another half hour on this one for absolute sure. But, yeah, Kelly, congratulations. You know, we get to sit down and have some great talks in your office. And I have never left your office when Carla's come up and not thought of, you know, what a special person and a teacher. And, you know, as Nance has shown me, Without great partners and great friends, I don't know what we have.
Exactly.
So congrats to both of you.
Okay, thanks, Lou. We'll talk on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Busy show today, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Let's get them going. Eric Francis Fridays is next right here on Hockey Central.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Kelly Kirsch, doing your thing on Friday. Thanks for joining us. It is Hockey Central at noon. Time for Eric Francis Fridays, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, Calgary's original Infinity destination. Own one and you'll understand. Hyatt Infinity on Luxury Lane. Empower the drive. Eric, how are you? Oh, he just hung up on us. Was it something I said? Did I not read that liner properly? I thought I did a really good job of it. Anyway, I think we got him now. Francis, you hung up on us. Was the liner read not to your liking? What's the problem?
Technical difficulties. I'm going through a renovation. Let's leave it at that.
There we go. Okay, we want to talk a little bit about Flames in just a bit, but I wanted to get your reaction to, you've seen lots of team unveils and uniform unveils. I think, you know, for the most part, Seattle got it right with the Kraken and with the uniforms and the logo and the color scheme. What says you about the 32nd team in the NHL?
I love it. I love it. And from day one, when people started throwing out all sorts of possible names, there were a lot of really good options. I thought there were three or four that were the obvious front runners, but I always liked Kraken.
Yeah.
And, you know, my friends joke with me that I like it because I'm a big rum drinker and I've been drinking the Kraken for years. But I found it amazing yesterday how many of my friends, first of all, I think they all loved it. I love the color schemes. That's very Seattle. Those are Seattle colors, and that's why I'm glad they stayed with that. But, you know, amazing how many of my friends did not know what Kraken meant, you know, like everybody learned a little bit of something yesterday about the history of the Kraken and what it is and how it's kind of, native to that Puget Sound area. So I thought that was really, there's a cool history behind it. The logo is fantastic, well thought of, well designed. It's pretty hard to please everyone when you unveil a name or a logo or your colors. I mean, there's lots of ways for people to pick holes in it, but I didn't see anything wrong with any of it. I love it. And I think it's all hockey fans. We're all excited that there's going to be another team, and we're all fascinated to see if they go about trying to build the team the same way that Vegas did, which was like one of the most incredible builds in sports history, or are other teams more hesitant to work out deals with them at the expansion draft. There's so many interesting things about it. But now we have a color scheme, a logo, a name, and the identity of that thing starts to take shape. I love it.
Do you think they floated that name Kraken just to see if people loved it? You know, like the power of public opinion? Because it seems to me maybe they did that on purpose, and if people, you know, hated it and it was like, no way, you know, then maybe they would have went with something a little more animal-like, you know, like Sockeye or something like that. But we heard that name kind of pretty strong for about a year. You wonder if that was accidentally on purpose they leaked that out.
Wow, there's so much money involved in, you know, the merchandising and all that they did. I guarantee they did a million tests, you know, on the marketplace to find out what people thought of it, because that's so important. If you come up with something that's really dorky and it's not going to sell, then that hurts you to the tune of millions and millions of dollars every single year that you're in existence. So they put a lot of thought into this. They had a couple of years to put that thought into it, and I think they nailed it. And, you know, it's one of those things that you look at the Mighty Ducks, for example, and that we look back and we laugh and think about how cheesy that was. Well, they actually nailed it. Even though at the beginning, no one really thought it was a good idea unless you were under 10 years of age. But, you know, over time it evolved. They took out the Mighty off of it, which is probably the right thing to do.
They laughed all the way to the bank, Eric. They made so much money off merchandise.
Absolutely. So, you know, these whatever, you know, the masses think of it is important, and I guarantee they did their research on it, yeah.
So that's Seattle. The Seattle Kraken are coming, and we talked about it. Obviously, the Flames will be in the same, you know, same division, basically. What do you think another team on the West Coast, and how it kind of aligns with the division? It looks like Arizona is going to go to the Central. There had been some talk that Edmonton and Calgary would go to the Central, and Colorado would go to the Pacific, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they've been pretty adamant that Edmonton and Calgary stay in the Pacific, but it'll be interesting. And I'm wondering about the rivalry, because they thought Vegas and Arizona would be natural rivals. It didn't really work out, not yet anyway. It's more like Vegas and San Jose. They're the teams that hate each other. So maybe it's a bit of an assumption that it'll be Vancouver-Seattle with a natural rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I think if you ask someone who doesn't follow the Flames very closely, who's their biggest rival? And I think, especially after what we saw this year, everyone would say Edmonton, and based on the history as well. But I would argue with anybody that the biggest rival the Calgary Flames have is the Vancouver Canucks, and that's largely because of the playoffs and because they played so many divisional games, and then that led to playoff matchups. That's where rivalries are really built, in your division. So, you know, I think it's a natural assumption that it's going to be a Vancouver-Seattle rivalry, and I think that's great to start off with, but these things kind of take on a life of their own once the playoffs start and you find who you're playing in the division. I love all the possibilities. And, you know, going back to the name too, you know, everyone's having a ton of fun already with, you know, are they going to call the building the Crack House? You know, are the fans the Crackheads? And I actually think that that's good for it too, just to have people having fun with it and talking about it. It's better to be talked about than not talked about when it comes to names of teams and franchises. So that's all part of the fun too. And if you think for a second that they unveiled it yesterday and everyone started making those jokes like that the arena is going to be called the Crack House and they were caught off guard, you're dead wrong. They know that that's part of what's going to be happening there. And I don't think you're going to see many reporters write it in their copy when they talk about last night at the Crack House. Maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe they'll have fun with it. I don't know. I don't think it's the kind of thing you really should have too much fun with. But right now, that's the prevalent talk amongst people who are having a little fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, the sports media is known for, you know, trying to, you know, beat a dead horse when it comes to trying to be funny sometimes. And I got a question for you just before we move on to the Flames. What are we going to hear more? The media guys going, oh, it's going to be quite interesting when Gary Bettman hands out the cup and no one boos him. And then the other one is, well, the Arizona Coyotes are sort of used to this because they play in front of no fans. Which one do you think will be more? If Arizona gets knocked out, then probably it'll be the Bettman clip. But just wondering which one cliche you're going to hear.
Yeah, aren't we funny, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, just in that vein, I still am bothered by the fact that people boo Gary Bettman. It's just become a thing now, and people just do it. 90% of the people in some of these arenas don't even know why they're booing. It's just an NHL tradition now.
Yeah.
But for what that guy's done for the game, especially in Canada, it's so nonsensical that this guy gets booed. It actually irritates me, the ignorance of people doing that. But, you know, whatever, it's a thing. And sometimes you just can't stop, something like that. It's a movement that's just been going on for so many years. It's logic is not going to stop it anytime soon.
This is Eric Francis Fridays for Hyatt Infinity. Let's talk about the Calgary Flames as they get closer and closer to heading to the bubble. And up in Edmonton, they will have an inter-squad game. We had Lou on for the first segment, like we always do, and he brought up Milan Lucic, and that was kind of the comments from Jeff Ward. He was talking about, you know, this is why they got him, right? And he's had all kinds of playoff success, be it a while ago. But he seems to be the guy that he might be that X factor to help the Flames out against the Jets. Where do you come out on Milan Lucic?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wrote about him yesterday too, because I just think it's, you know, I'm not going to go as far as to say he's the X factor, because I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he's nowhere near the player he was when he won a cup in 2011. That's 9 years ago. That's pretty well documented. He's not the player he was, but he brings intangibles that I think this team has been short on for several years, and that's moxie, experience, and leadership. And you know, he's not an important player, generally speaking, because he's a third liner. But in the playoffs when moxie is important, and I do think this team was pushed around in each of its last two playoffs, and experience, you know, he's been talking to the guys endlessly for the last month since he came back to Calgary about the importance of just not fooling around and getting serious about the playoffs starting a month ago. And Rasmus Anderson spoke to that yesterday and said, the guy just is nonstop reminding us, guys, this is the playoffs. Get your head together. This is so important. And I think that's important because this team, I think, went into the playoffs last year and didn't change gears. And if he can help them in some small way prepare, then I think that's good. You know, I know that other people certainly in Edmonton are mocking the fact that someone would suggest in any way that Milan Lucic could be an X factor or an important part of the playoffs. And that's fair. I would mock anyone who would suggest that James Neal could be an important part of a playoff. But, you know, he does represent some intangibles that this team is sorely lacking. And I think he's taking it upon himself to try and, you know, play those things up. I love his anecdote yesterday when he said, when he broke into the league, I asked him who taught him about playoff experience and what it takes to win. He said, my line mates were Mark Savard and Glenn Murray. And Glenn Murray told me, oh, by the way, in the first 5 minutes of the playoffs, we don't play with a puck. You just go around and
hit people.
Let your presence be felt. And he says, and that's what I did. I just ran around for the first 5 minutes, just hitting everything I could. I think the Flames want him to do the exact same thing on August 1st. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's so important to set that tone early, and no one on the Flames can do it better than him.
Yeah, I am curious to see what those games are going to look like on August 1st. Like, are they going to be like, are they playoff just like always? Is it going to be kind of a different version of it or not? I'm not sure. Eric, I asked you this question last week. I'm going to ask you it next week, and I'm going to ask you it today, and you probably know what it is. It's about the goaltenders and where you come out on who is in front and who you are starting a week tomorrow.
Well, I said last week, and I think it should be Cam Talbot, and I think it will be Cam Talbot. I actually don't know who it's going to be, because I think the one factor is this. First of all, I think Talbot's been slightly better during camp, but again, I haven't been to every single skate. I don't watch every shot on goal, and I think you have to take the results of the inner squad games with a grain of salt. But he has been a little sharper in those inner squad games. And we've got another one today, and that'll help tell the tale as well. Talbot's played 15 NHL games, almost got the Oilers to the conference final a few years, you know, three, 4 years back, whatever the year was, 15, 16. And I think that experience counts for something. The fact that he was the better goalie in the second half counts for something. I understand Riddick was the MVP of the first half. Here's the big X factor. If management gets involved, and obviously they do have a say, I know that their number one goal is to just pick the guy who they think is going to win them a bloody series. That's all they care about. But I think in the back of minds is also, hey, Riddick's here next year. We think he's our goalie of the future. We've got him under contract for next year. This might be the year we have to finally see what we've got in him. He'd have a short leash, but maybe he's the guy you got to go with. As opposed to starting a guy who's going to be a UFA, you probably want to bring him back next year as your 1A, 1B goalie. And if you put him in the playoffs and he has some success, he's going to cost a whole lot more to bring back next year as well. Again, these are not the primary factors going into the decision. I think they just look at who's been better in camp, period. But I also think it's easier to start a veteran and put a playoff rookie in if things go sideways, as opposed to going the other way around. Again, would I fault them if they started Riddick? No. I would start Talbot. I think he's who they should start. But I have no idea what they're really going to do. If I had to guess, I'd say Talbot.
What do you think they do, or what would you do on Tuesday against the Oilers, where you get a full, like a real game against real opposition? Do you give Riddick the entire game, or do you split it up, or how do you think that works?
I think you give the whole game to whoever you think is going to start in the playoffs. And if that guy gets lit up, then I think you go to the other guy. Okay. I think that game is that important. You know, if he gets lit up and it's not really his fault, it's just because the team wasn't ready. Then continue with that guy. But I don't know. I wouldn't have a problem with him splitting it. But I think it's time. It's time now. You're going to start the lines. You're going to start against it. Winnipeg. You're going to start the playoff, the penalty killers, the power play. Everything that you do on the 28th, to me, has to be exactly what you intended to do. on August 1st. So yeah. I would start Talbot and go with like that. But and well, you tell me, do you agree? If the guy who you start against Edmonton, clearly he's going to be your starter against August 1st. You're not saving anybody here for the August 1st.
If he gets
lit up, do you change tack?
Well, it depends on how he gets lit up, right? It depends if it's target practice on power play after power play with Draisaitl, McDavid, or is it a situation where, man, he should have had that one, or oh, he should have had that one. Because it's going to be interesting going from, you know, and then the next game where Winnipeg plays Vancouver. I'm curious about that. Like, everyone's talking about Connor Hellebuck, and he's the best. Like, he's got great numbers, but he hasn't played since March like everybody else, so where are we at with him too, right? So it's going to be interesting to see which guys can dial it in, because you let a bad goal in, if you let two bad goals in game one, that's no good. That's no good. And I just don't know. I mean, personally, I would split that game on Tuesday between the two guys and let them know that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's fair too, right? Because you want them both ready. If one guy falters, like you alluded to, the leash will be short. If whoever starts August 1st lets in two goals in the first period and they're any one of them are suspect, I think it's easy to pull that guy and say, okay, reset for the whole team. We're putting the other guy in.
Yeah.
And just going back to Hellebuck, you know, I was doing some number crunching the other day, and yeah, he has the second most wins in the NHL over the last 3 years, and including this year. But he's 2-8 in his last 10 playoff starts. You know, prior to that, he was really good when the Jets had a pretty good run a couple of years ago, but up until kind of the end. 2-8 in his last 10 playoff starts. Again, throw all the numbers from this year, last year, previous years out the window. He is clearly going to go in as the goalie that everyone thinks is going to be better. If the Calgary Flames goaltender of choice is better than Hellebuck, obviously we know who's going to win the series.
Yeah.
You know, that's obvious.
All right, we'll let you. So when do you go to Edmonton? Like, when's what's your itinerary?
You know, they gave me the option of going up kind of whenever I wanted, so I delayed it as much as possible. I'll go up August 1st. Who wants to go to Edmonton early?
Well, yeah, you don't want extra time up there, right?
No. Like, so I'm going up August 1st, maybe an hour before the game. No, I'll go up that morning and kind of get a lay of the land. And I'm excited. I'm excited for August 1st. I still can't get excited for what's going on right now at the Dome. But I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer. And those who are listening who are saying, I'm not going to be interested August 1st, I think you're in denial right now. You will.
Yeah.
5 games the first day, 6 games the next day. I'm sorry, but it's going to pull you in. I don't care how many barbecues or golf games you want to be at. You can do that as well. You can have your cake and eat it too on August 1st. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll talk next Friday. Of course, you'll be in on Monday as well as part of the Eric Francis Show for Horse Racing Alberta. But we'll talk to you next Friday for sure.
Cheers, Kelly. Thanks, bud.
There we go. Eric Francis Fridays brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, Calgary's original Infinity destination. Own one and you'll understand. Hyatt Infinity on Luxury Lane. Empower the drive. 1 o'clock means the arrival of the one, the only Peter Klein, and it is a short day for Pinder and Steinberg as we've got baseball for you. Jays are in Tampa. The season starts, 60 games, and things are happening for the Jays. They've got a home place. They're going to play in Buffalo where their AAA ball team is, so they're going to figure out how they can work on the nice little parts that you have to, you know, have for ball players. So that's happening. So they will be in Buffalo for their home games. And, they start against Tampa, and then they go to Washington, and it starts. 60 games. It'll be quick. It'll be quick, and we'll have a bunch of them for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Fridays means Elliot Friedman. He joined the morning show. We'll get you that chat next right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Busy day on Sportsnet 960 The Fan after playing like old games for months and months. We have a game that we don't know the outcome to, and it counts. It'll be the Blue Jays season opener against the Tampa Bay Rays. It will go tonight at 4:30. That's when we pick up the coverage, and yep, they'll have it. Ben and Mike will have the call for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We'll do the same two teams coming up tomorrow at 1 and then Sunday at 11. As we got lots of Blue Jays for you, got lots of Flames coming up too, as the Flames will take on the Edmonton Oilers in an exhibition game from the Hub, and that will be a 6 o'clock pregame, 8:30 puck drop, as we'll be covering that game big time and maybe get some answers on what's happening with the goaltenders for the Calgary Flames. We'll find out a little bit more. Also, that we're trying to do the alt stream thing for the inner squad game, but I just don't think we've got it together, to be honest with you. So we've been having some equipment problems and challenges, technology, but so that's the plan. But we will have the big preview for you for sure. What else did I want to mention? Okay, we have Peter Klein coming up at 1 o'clock. Steinberg joins at 2, and then baseball at 4:30. We had Elliot Friedman on earlier today, and they talked about the hub cities, Toronto and Edmonton. They're ready. They're fenced off. The restaurants are ready to go. The bus drivers are ready to go. They asked Elliot if he had any surprises or any thoughts on what the hub cities are set up like.
I think the most significant piece of news in there kind of got buried a little bit, and that is that the deputy commissioner, Bill Daly, said that as of the time they did that call, there had been no positive COVID cases this week. So, you know, like to me, you know, like it would last when they announced this week that there'd only been two positive cases since the previous announcement. I mean, I was blown away by that because the math, it just didn't seem to make sense. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we're going from two to, knock on wood, zero so far this week, it sure looks like this is trending in the right direction. You know, I really believe, guys, that if you look at what's happened in soccer, where they went from the precipice of disaster to a day with zero testing in the bubble, the NBA's had good testing results in the bubble. I think that, you know, people are confident that the bubble can hold. It's just a matter of getting there. And it looks like the behavior is responsible enough. I think what happened in Boston put a scare into people. You know, one positive test and then a bunch of guys getting shut down for exposure reasons. You know, obviously a little of that happened in your city too, in Calgary. To me, that's the most significant thing, that if the testing stays that good in terms of the results, then we're in a good spot. I was also interested in the setup of the arena. Like earlier this week, I tweeted a little bit of video out from the NBA exhibitions and scrimmages this week. And I thought it was really interesting. It looks in the NHL that the screens are not as close to the rink or the actual ice as the NBA screens are to the court,
yeah.
But it still looks pretty interesting. Like I'm really curious to see how it's all going to work.
Well, you put what is between $50 and $70 million towards something. I guess it's going to look good. I'm very curious, and maybe you have more intel because you'll be a part of it. But the broadcast and what it's going to look like. We know that there's from 20 to 32 different camera angles.
Yeah.
This new kind of a crane cam that they're going to have.
Yeah.
This is going to be it's going to be a new look for sure.
No, there's no question about that. And you know, I think some of the cameras are going to be potentially movable during games. Like, the bottom line is, you know, like, right now, when there's fans in the building, there's a limit in terms of where you can go. Now, the only limit is going to be structural, right, or mental, in mm-hmm. terms of where you think you can go. So they definitely will do some different things. That camera, the Jitticam, you know, that's, for those people who are kind of not familiar with it, if you're a football fan, it's sort of like the camera that goes right behind the quarterback so you can see his view of the field.
Sure.
That was something they were talking about right from the beginning when they realized they didn't need the scoreboards, because normally you need the scoreboard there for fans to see and everything. Now, since there's no fans, you can take the scoreboards out of the way, and that allows you to set up that camera to go up and down the ice. So yes, there's no question that there's going to be some opportunity to do some new and different things. You know, I thought it was really, I like the idea of them going to each team and saying, you know, give us your goal music, give us your chants. You know, I don't think they'll be bringing the actual cannon to Toronto, but it sure sounds like that whenever Columbus yeah. scores, that cannon noise is going off. So, like, I like that kind of thing. You try to create as much of it as you possibly can.
It is interesting, just going back to the one point you made about having zero positives, there will be some explaining to do if you get these teams within the bubble and you've got zero across the board, and then if something flares up, so it'll be, well, where, how? Obviously, you've got, what did I read this morning, in terms of security, 125 security, health ambassadors, you're going to have executive and all of that, but like you say, it would seem like this could potentially be accomplished. Get in there and lock it down, and if everybody is responsible about it, it could work.
Well, I mean, and you're hoping it works, right? Like, that's the tough thing about life right now, Dino, is that what's true today may not be true tomorrow. So, you know, we're on a good run right now. You hope it stays. You know, one of the things I heard, and I was talking to someone about it this week, is that I heard that on one of the Board of Governor calls, you know, the commissioner made it pretty clear that, you know, you talked about between 50 and 70 million about how much this is costing the NHL. Because of that, the commissioner made it very clear that any violations in terms of leaving the bubble would be seriously punished. Like, these are not going to be slaps on the wrist if somebody is caught leaving. In the stage four protocol, it mentions fines and draft picks. I'm curious to see if there's any way there could be suspensions involved. I do think the commissioner made it very clear to the teams that these will not be soft penalties for violations of impermissible defections from the curfew zone.
He's Elliot Friedman, our NHL insider, joining us here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Ryan.
We've got Chris Daniel from King 5 coming on to chat with us and after you, Elliot, so I don't want to go too much on Seattle, but then again, we have a 30-second franchise and a lot of things were unveiled yesterday, and I just want your impressions on how the day went and how you took it in.
Well, I liked it. You know, I was a big Kraken guy, so I was happy to see that. You know, just in the reaction to it yesterday, one of the things that, you know, a couple of people were telling me is that you don't always see the team name, the patch or logo, and the jersey all unveiled in the same day. And normally, in normal life, Ryan, you get those things. Maybe you get the team name and the logo released at the same time and the jersey later. And because of the times we're in, Seattle decided to do all at once. And this person said to me that he wouldn't be surprised if every team does it this way from here on in, because it was such a hit. You know, I think there's a number of, like, one of the conversations I had was that, you know, after the name Kraken was kind of decided, they went through, you know, there were some people who were kind of not sure. They were like, really? Like, is this really going to work? And they kind of talked about how once they began to see what they had in mind for the logo and the jersey and the identity of sort of the story, they really thought it all worked. It made a lot more sense. And I think that helps Seattle. You know, Ryan, I think that one of the other things, too, is that it's different and it's bold. Like, it's an out-of-the-box idea, and I think hockey needs more of that. I like it for that reason. And I just heard, I heard the meetings were painstaking, as in, you know, they would argue about, okay, how many eyes do we want on the logo? You know, what color are they? Like, I just heard the detail, like, some people who are involved, they told me that in terms of the detail that they debated and argued about, man, there was a lot. And I think one of the questions they asked was, can we see a player lifting the Stanley Cup in this jersey? Like, we have to believe that. And they do. And I really like the ideas that they had.
There you go, Elliot Friedman with the guys from earlier this morning. That will do it for Hockey Central at Noon. Up next, Peter Klein kicks off Pinder and Steinberg. You are listening to Sportsnet 960 The Fan.